What can I do? How can I help?
I don't know that you can.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is season 10, episode 19. I don't know what's wrong with me. I will be your father figure. And now here are your hosts, Tari Arrieto and Sarah Dipatek.
Please don't be my father figure.
I think I just got heat stroke from having the air off to record all these podcasts.
Hi.
Hello.
Ready to get into it?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's start with our C plot. Ryan's back and Janet's not so psyched. So before we actually get into this, we need to note guest starring Randy Spelling. Obviously, we know that from the name. And I'm going to call him Randy like 1,000 times instead of Ryan, because when the names are that close, just call him Randy. Who cares?
Yeah, exactly. It's not like that anyone notices anything else. My note is that this is the best Randy Spelling ever looks.
Mm.
He actually looks not revolting.
True. He looks less fetal than he has in the past.
Yeah. And the like super over-gelled styles of the time had calmed down a bit, so he's not rocking that anymore. He's still not the cuter half-brother, but
no.
Much improved.
The other one did have a ponytail, so.
But the last time we saw him, he'd cut it off.
Oh, that's right. He had it. Yeah. Sorry.
I can't believe I knew that. Kill me.
Speaking of Spellings, this episode was also directed by Tari Spelling. So,
oh, man.
We have that to look forward to. So Janet's in the backyard watering plants when Steve's shitty brother Ryan comes yelling around a corner and scares the shit out of her. And this is somehow their very first meeting. Then he and his huge raver pants see Maddie in her swing, and he says this, clip two.
Is realism defined?
No.
No.
It's not. No. It's not surrealism defined. Not really
isn't.
But I think this is supposed to be our first hint that, like, Ryan is smart. And, like, the show makes it out like he's been smart this whole time, which I don't think we've seen any evidence of it.
No. I mean, if he were that smart, he would know that it's not pronounced Amherst. We are recording this on my dad's birthday. He is a graduate. It's just Amherst. That's it.
Oh, okay.
The one in New York, the town in New York, may be pronounced Amherst. I don't know.
It is. That's. I was about to say, I live near Amherst, New York, and they all say it Amherst. So,
yeah. So, thus the confusion, and I get it, but, and also, I don't think he could even get into the town.
They also say beef on weck over there. So, you know, you can't count on them for anything.
Yeah, this whole retcon is like, why is this? Like, are we trying to backdoor pilot Randy's Amherst adventures? Like,
oh,
who
God.
Cares?
I didn't even think of that.
Janet and Steve just spend the last year and a half of the show with this interminable, unfunny, untouching crap. Like, they're lucky to get, you know, we almost never pull clips from their stories. So I guess this is an improvement for them, but not really. It's just so pointless. And
well, yeah, but after this, there really are only like 6 episodes left. So, I mean, it is possible that someone had that idea and then this episode happened. They were like, oh, never mind. But yes, Janet asks how he likes school. I'm scared to say it now. And he's kind of shifty eyed about it. She's just started talking about some of the plans that they've made for his visit, like going to the Getty Museum and the beach, when Steve comes running out and calls him Mr. Pre-Med. Again, no one is buying this.
No.
But then tells Janet that he's Steve's little brother. Like, does he think that they would not have covered that in their chat before he got there? Whatever. Ryan says he's starting to look like Rush, which Steve always has looked like Rush. We've talked about it. But when Janet makes up the plans they've made, Ryan says he's all about partying and starts listing the clubs that he wants to go to. And Steve eagerly joins him in naming hotspots. And Janet, a little martyry, says she's happy to stay home with Maddie, though I do believe she doesn't actually want to go bar hopping with them, not that she might not want to do something else outside the home. But an oblivious Steve says she's the best. And the next morning, Janet comes into the living room to wake up Steve and Ryan, who are snoring as they sleep, head to toe on the couch.
That was kind of cute.
It was cute. Steve has a meeting with a Sasquatch watch group in an hour where I assume he will say hi to your husband, Sarah.
I did feel both seen and attacked. It was weird.
So Steve whines at Janet to go in his place, but she can't. And she's still being very gentle under the circumstances until she notices the tail of the carousel horse broken off and sitting on the coffee table. Apparently, Ryan tripped in the dark, and Steve supposedly always thought the horse was ugly. I mean,
amen.
I agree. So Janet drags Steve off the couch and orders him to stop showing off for his brother. She tries to get him to see how Ryan seeks Steve's approval, which Steve doesn't buy, saying Ryan is the smart one in the family, while over Janet's shoulder, Ryan holds the horsetail to his butt and hops to make Steve laugh. Janet thinks Ryan's trying to live up to Steve's bad boy rep, in which case it's Steve's job to protect Ryan from Ryan's worst excesses and bad ideas. And Steve says this, clip three.
I'm glad he's coming out of his shell.
What shell?
Yeah.
Please watch the show that you write for, writers. We know it's a trial, but it's your fucking job. This kid was hospitalized for alcohol poisoning and almost died. And it was not the only time that we saw him being a just like id blob at various times, like out of his shell. Like, did they go back and sort of like draw like glasses with medical tape fixing the bridge onto all the frames in which he previously appeared? Like, here's a, you know, book that he's obviously reading. Just stop. It's Randy Spelling. Stop.
Didn't he also like fall into a cabana because he was trying to spy on a girl he liked while she was changing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Steve eventually agrees with Janet, but then announces that it's time for Bloody Marys. So, okay. And despite all the cool clubs that Ryan wanted to hit up, he and Steve and Janet have ended up at the shitty old Peach Pit After Dark, where she busts both dudes for openly ogling the same barmaid. Ryan's disgusted when Steve and Janet matter-of-factly react to finding baby drool and carrots in Janet's hair, and Steve defensively denies that this is their entire life right now. And Janet doesn't really help by saying there's also diaper rash, but then Steve is like, there's also diaper rash in a very whatever way that endears me to him anew. Sorry. It was funny.
Yeah, it's hard to continue hating him, which is a problem, probably, but whatever. We're almost done.
Well, we are and we aren't.
Yeah.
August 7th. Getting close.
Oh.
So Ryan continues being superior, and Steve hopes it happens to Ryan too one day, but Ryan took a child development course and is certain he wants no part of parenting. Good job, Ryan. Please go back in time and tell Billy. This leads both Steve and Janet to ask about his classes, but he dodges their questions and heads off after the barmaid, whereupon Janet says she wants to hire the diaper pail by Ryan's pillow later, and Steve is with it again. Amusing.
Yeah.
But the next day, Ryan doesn't make it home, and Steve is worried. Janet tells him to call Noah and get the waitress's phone number, and Steve normally wouldn't care except for how, he says their other brother almost died from alcohol poisoning. Whoops. Still.
No, that's wrong.
It was?
Yes.
Okay.
I will bet anyone, like, a lot of American dollars. It was absolutely Randy who had the cannula.
And oh, you're right. You're
because
right.
Because Brandon's like giving Austin a bunch of coffee to sober up. And I distinctly remember the terrible nose pinch blocking that Austin stole from David for that scene. And B, that we screamed about it for like 10 minutes because coffee does not sober you up. The more you know.
Okay. I apologize. Still, they remembered something that happened in the Claire era, even if not perfectly. So partial credit.
Yeah.
But just then, Ryan rolls up and Steve starts daddishly yelling at him in clip four.
It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Where the hell were you?
I was with Katrina Morowski. Actually, her friends call her Kitty. And Steve, she purrs.
Hey, Ryan, we really wish you would have called.
Sorry, Mom. I didn't know I had a curfew.
Didn't know you needed one, you jerk. And don't you ever talk to my wife like that.
Come on, chill out, Steve. What, like you never pulled this kind of stuff when you were my age?
Well, if I did, it was a mistake. Do you stay out all night at school? How do you keep your grades up?
This from a guy who partied 4 years straight only to have his dad buy him a newspaper.
Ooh.
If he helped me, it's because I needed it. You don't need help. You're smart.
Will you stop saying that?
Sure.
I think Steve just has high expectations for you.
Yeah, well, you know what? I didn't ask for a fan club, okay?
Hey, Ryan. What happened to you?
I was a brain in high school, and it sucked.
No, you weren't.
So you know what? I went to college, and I tried being you. I went to keggers, I blew off classes, I slept in late. I had a blast. Guess what, Steve? You'd make a lousy doctor. I'm on academic probation. Bye-bye med school.
This is so stupid. Like, is he, first of all, trying to blame Steve for his bad decisions? Like, Steve was not in med school. He was in some bullshit business admin class that allowed him to blow classes off and party all the time.
Yeah. Also, if it sucked to be a brainiac or whatever, then just stop doing that. Like,
right.
take it as a sign from the universe.
The storyline is basically book smart minus the part where you try to have all your fun in one night before you go to college rather than fuck up your whole semester. So none of this is on Steve. Sorry, no. Dude.
And who cares? Really, who cares?
I mean, I assume that there is more we are going to have to care about because where they leave it is he's dropped out. And that's all we learn about it. And Steve is sad, but also tells Janet they're stopping at one kid, which, you know what? Good idea.
Makes sense.
On to the B plot. Donna lets herself get entangled with Noah again, and Camille is sick of her shit. So in the middle of the night, Donna calls David from the ER to tell him that Noah is hurt and explains about him breaking into the apartment when she stopped answering his calls. Noah has a concussion. How will they know? But assuming they don't need to keep him overnight at the hospital, she will take him back to her place. David doesn't think he should under the circumstances. Doesn't think she should. And for once is not wrong, but Dawn is not interested in his advice. The doctor comes out to say that Noah's basically... No. Doctor comes out to say Noah's basically fine other than the aforementioned concussion and some bruised ribs. Standing by, Matt and Kelly look like they're just waiting to be bitches about it. And sure enough, when Donna reports that she told David they'll be taking care of him for a few days, Kelly's like, we are. And Donna stands firm through Kelly's stink faces. And when Matt goes to get the car, she says he feels terrible, you know, for hitting him and stuff. Donna says he shouldn't. And Kelly immediately says she guesses Donna's right about that. Kelly raises some of the same concerns David did, and Donna also tells her to stop, insisting they have nothing to fear from Noah, and everyone rolls their eyes at everyone else. It's kind of enjoyable, and of course, there are gifts. So the next day, Donna brings Noah burnt toast in bed and then feeds him eggs. Like, I think if they sent him home, he can use his arms to feed himself. Also... she's in a tank top and her cleavage is crooked, obviously. He at least has the grace to be embarrassed about everything, but she has a direct order in clip 5.
Noah, you have to get back into AA.
First of all, back? He has literally never been in it. Mm. The only time we've seen him even adjacent to it, he was like, nah, and had a swig from his flask.
Standing in the doorway.
Second of all, you have to get back into AA. Like, it's... I don't know, hot yoga? You should try getting back into meditation. It really seemed to keep you chill. It's not how recovery works. Show, please, yeah. Ever get it right. Ever. No. And Noah, Vincent Young's idea of acting concussed is to look like he's simultaneously passing a tiny cactus through his urethra and has one stuck in his throat. Like, the faces are amazing. I mean, they're bad in quality, but they're extremely enjoyable. because he is terrible, but he is trying 110% to act. It's just not working. And
he is. I thought, to me, that was more like he was wincing about his bruised ribs than he was wincing about his head. Like, you know, moving around would hurt if your ribs were bruised. But you're right. He does. It does all look like GI distress more so than anything.
Yeah, he really looks like, oh, I thought that was guacamole and it was wasabi. That's his face.
Anyway, to Donna's order, he will not even agree to get back into AA, whatever either of them thinks it means. And she tells him he's on his own if he doesn't. So then at David's place that night, there's banter with Camille about the right way to clear a table when Donna calls to tell David that sleepaway camp is on. Camille says that the way Donna and David constantly bicker and make up reminds her of her grandparents, and David chuckles that it does feel like they've known each other that long. No kidding. Can relate. Yeah.
Shade.
This whole show is a face app old filter for both of us. Anyway, then the phone rings again, clip six.
Not sleepaway camp, it's slumber party massacre, so much better.
Get out of here. All right. We gotta go look for the remote.
So the music of dismay is while Camille is watching him all squinty and suspicious. And so David goes to the living room area and starts shuffling stuff around like he needs to start watching the movie immediately. But his get out of here to Donna was so flat.
Yeah.
I thought at first he was telling Donna to get out of there as in like stop calling because she was annoying him. Because guess what? Not good directing happening in this episode.
No.
Can't imagine what.
Or acting. Brian Austin that Green too. Has given up. and here's yet another retcon. Like, not only was Randy Ryan super smart and got into Amherst College, but this like horror movie thing is the thing that Donna and David have always done. We've never seen it.
Yep,
I think maybe at the actual slumber party in season one, they might have watched a horror movie. Maybe.
Don't remember. I don't remember either. I remember Andrea watching one during Spring Dance.
Hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, Donna gets home from work the next day to find out Noah has cleaned up the living room, which is honestly the least he could do. I don't care how bruised his ribs are. He says she looks tired and starts petting her hair, but she doesn't really respond. To remind us how little time has passed, he says that a couple of weeks ago, he thought he was going to die and all he could think about was her. So just to, in that time, her dad died like more yeah. recently than his kidnapping.
I actually forgot about that.
It was two episodes ago.
I know. Look.
Exactly. Just, this fucking show. So she noncommittally.
I also forgot Gina existed until just now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, remember her?
Yeah.
Hair was so pretty.
It was.
So, all he could think about was her when he thought he was going to die. And she noncommittally says this, clip seven.
We've been through a lot.
Yeah, we have.
Yeah, we all have, buddy.
Yeah.
So given another shot, says he would do a lot of things differently.
What he thinks about that. You want to get a beer? No.
So given another shot, he says he would do a lot of things differently with Donna, especially the end, and who can blame him? They broke up for such a stupid reason. Just a reminder, it was that he said he went to Harvard, but he never did. Okay.
Maybe if he said he'd gone to Amherst, they would have believed him. Apparently that's credible.
So he leans in to kiss her, and she kisses him back briefly before breaking away and rudely wiping her mouth. She knows what he's feeling because she feels lonely all the time, but they can't get back together because he reacted to their breakup by partying, whereas she actually dealt with it and got over it. And he's only starting to feel things now because he's sober, and he agrees that she is right and says he will leave.
And also, now that you're sober, her line is, now that you're sober.
Well, I mean, he's presumably sober since he was in the hospital, but yeah, I would not say he's
the way
sober,
she says like, it is like he's sober, like he's
given up drinking.
Yes, like he has sobriety. Like I don't.
Right? No.
I think we're supposed to assume that maybe they just couldn't pay for an AA set.
Right.
Just go to the doodle area and, I don't know, tell the drawings.
So Camille and David are waiting for a table when Camille reports on a fight that she and Donna had at the store. Clip 8.
I got on this weird rant about how perfect my life is right now. And as the words were coming out of my mouth, I realized that I've basically stolen everything from Donna's world.
That's not true.
The store, her boyfriend.
Her ex-boyfriend.
Still, oh, I feel bad. I mean, things stink for her right now. And there I was, rubbing my happiness right in her face.
I mean, it's happiness with David, so like, grain of salt. But also,
yeah,
like, why did we get that nothing of a scene between Noah and Donna and this fight happened off screen?
Yeah.
Like, I wonder if there was a song playing under it that they couldn't clear, because it seems like a big thing not to show us for Camille and Donna to have, like, friction.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And also, like, it does seem like the episode was running short, because there is a certain scene later in the episode that seriously is still going on. So
So David says Donna isn't that kind of person. He should know. She is David's best friend, but that just cues Camille to say she's still getting used to the idea that David's best friend is not just a woman, but his ex. And their relationship can't grow in the shadow of his relationship with Donna. David curtly says he can't drop Donna, to which Camille says she would never ask him to. She would just like some distance sometimes. He's glad that she said something, but also doesn't totally agree to that, which is when the phone rings and David lets it go to voicemail. And it is, in fact, Donna moping on her bed. So the next day, David comes to the store to apologize. He completely ignores Donna's moderately rueful comments, indicating that she thinks he is apologizing for not having returned her call, when in fact he's apologizing for Camille not only being late because he didn't set the alarm, but for being even later by getting coffee before coming in. People who are late, don't do that. Don't be late coming in with takeout coffee. It's infuriating to those of us who are on time. Anyway, for once, Donna actually sticks up for herself and basically demands an apology for David's failure to call, which he does not do, hilariously, just guessing that she wanted to talk to him about Noah. She tells him about the kiss, to which David has no reply, so Donna has to admit he told her so. She doesn't know how to set better boundaries, but David thinks that he does and tells her about changing their relationship to make Camille feel more comfortable, like she needs to knock off the multiple late-night phone calls, and she gets it. And David's dumb radio show is back. Oh. He loses his place in his notes, but then sees Donna walk in and announces that the next night's topic will be the rules of relationships, loving someone when they're no longer your significant other, and introducing a new person into the equation, not in a throuble way. He doesn't say that. I do. Donna's at the bar where Noah is working and, again, visibly suffering with the exertion. Because it's Vincent Young, he just looks like he's constipated.
Yeah, cute poo.
She came by to make sure he wasn't drinking. He admits that he wants a drink, but won't have one. We still don't know if he has even gone to one AA meeting since she told him that he needs to.
When would he have had time? He was cleaning the apartment and cute pooing.
Then working a shift, yeah. Mm-hmm. So he's apologizing again when David comes over to make it weird and like, do tennis eyes from one of them to the other, like any of this is his business. I mean, I guess it is because Donna's involved him, keeps asking his advice or whatever. But anyway, Noah takes off to deal with bar stuff. Donna insists to David that everything really is fine, but she appreciates his checking. He invites her next door to get food, and she sarcastically brings up his boundary talk, but it's not a test. He steps away to call Camille on her dumb old-timey phone. You can see it in the visual aids. It's like one of those weird handsets from the past with like the big hooked speaker part. Ugh, I hate it. Anyway, and tell her truthfully what he is doing. And Camille guesses that Donna just popped into the equation, so he knows she was listening. Clip 9.
I don't want you to think that I forgot about what you were saying. It's just, you know, Noah's here and Donna's a little worried.
So she takes care of him and you take care of her. There's a certain symmetry there.
I'll be over as soon as I can, all right?
David, it's fine. It's late. I'm tired. Go do what you have to do, and I'll talk to you tomorrow, okay? Good night.
Good night.
Everything okay?
Yeah. Yeah, it's good.
You sure?
Mm-hmm.
The music is acting like someone is having suicidal ideations. Is A, B, Camille, stick the landing. It's for everyone's own good. Let's just move this along.
Again, there are only 6 episodes left. Like, things need to start moving in a conclusory direction.
Also, if Donna doesn't want to have these, like, angsty run-ins with her ex-boyfriend who owns this establishment, she should go somewhere else. Try Eclipse. Yeah. Go to Delicious Cumin House.
Yeah.
Why do we bother?
So the next morning, Noah's in the kitchen eating cereal when David trudges in to be pissy about Noah and Donna and how he knows they kissed. She's trying to move forward and Noah keeps pulling her back, David says. Noah denies that he's the one doing that and suggests that David take a long look in the mirror. They talked for 13 seconds while David hovered over Donna and then took her for a burger. David's the one who can't get over Donna. You know what, dude? Good point.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't either, but still. David's not the one to say so. I feel.
Yeah,
at the store.
No, I agree.
Camille and Donna are having a pleasant time when Donna stops Camille on her way to lunch and apologizes if she's been getting in Camille and David's way lately. She's just used to monopolizing David's time. Camille says she has nothing to apologize for. Donna can't know they're together when she calls, even if Camille and David are together a lot lately. Donna knows David's crazy about Camille, and she's glad two good people found each other. Well, she's half right. Camille is glad to have David's blessing, given their friendship and working relationship as they discuss in clip 10.
I want your seal of approval before I fall for David any harder.
Ooh.
Go fall.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. See you later.
Bye.
Donna says one thing and the score says another.
Go
I don't
fall
get
on
it.
Someone else's dick. Just get on with the show, please.
Well, we're almost done this for now. Late at night, the mummy's ghost is on. Camille doesn't seem into it, but David says he'll cover her eyes. Over to Donna's apartment, she's watching it too and reaches for the phone, but then catches herself and puts it down. David looks at the phone, not ringing. Donna watches, sadly. This is exhausting, but at least we're done with it for now. We do have another storyline to get to, but first, we have a message for Jeffrey.
Sarah's brother, Jeffrey, is turning 40 soon. Sarah has done some complicated math to time this message out based on where Jeffrey is in his, again, with this listening cycle. So part of me feels like we should detail her to figuring out when Kelly's birthday is on this stupid show. But instead, we're just going to list 5 reasons Jeffrey is a better brother than any of the brothers on Beverly Hills 90210.
Number 1. It's tempting to bring up the inappropriately flirty vibes Brandon has with his twin, Brenda, but instead we'll note that Brandon, while perfectly willing to act like Brenda's third parent, also managed not to have her back in any conflicts with their mutual friends, making a big show of staying out of it instead of siding with, you know, his twin, unlike Jeffrey, who surely is loyal in such situations.
Number 2, Jeffrey would obviously never roofie anyone, unlike Josh, Noah's half-brother.
Number 3, nor would he lose Sarah in a park while coming down from a meth and orange juice high, like David did with Aaron, and the show's forgotten that shit, but we have not.
4, this is more of a figurative situation, and we don't know if Jeffrey was in a fraternity, but if he was, we're pretty sure he wouldn't try to blackball a pledge who called him out on skeezing on a homeless teen the way John Sears did to his fraternity brother, Steve.
Number 5, and if Sarah had super long, annoying hair like Dylan's sister, Erica, Jeffrey would tell her to cut it already because it's snarling up the Roomba.
Jeffrey, whenever you hear this, congratulations on not being just a better brother than these asshats, because low bar, but an excellent one from Sarah and all of us. Hear it again with this.
Happy birthday! And onto the A-plot. Time for a fun jaunt to track down a dad long thought to be dead. A rough-looking Dylan shares Billy's contempt of sensible ergonomics, evidently, as we see his laptop on the coffee table in his suite surrounded by crumpled legal pad pages. He's pouring himself coffee when there's a knock. It's Kelly. Apparently, he and Steve have been online all night trying to get phone numbers for all the passengers on the manifest. And just a reminder, it's the past, so that would be real hard. He also explains the Eddie Waitkus connection to her. But no one on the plane remembers Eddie, and Dylan is defeated until she suggests that he try to talk to the flight crew. So then Kelly goes to find Matt in his office. He is frustrated at his failure to drum up business cold calling. Kelly also feels weird not having anywhere to go and has apparently been toying with the idea of opening her own PR company, but changes the subject to Dylan and catches Matt up on the Jack business and that she and Dylan are going back to the airport to find the flight crew. Matt suggests that whatever or whoever Jack is hiding from might be dangerous. Kelly claims that Dylan's life derailed when he lost his father, as though he wasn't still around for another season and a half and didn't even do a year of undergrad with the rest of them eventually. Again, we've been over this so many times, how often the story changes of like what actually ruined Dylan, because I mean, it really could be any one of these things. Let's not try to pin his whole fuck up life on one or the other.
True.
But anyway, Matt also has nothing better to do than help Dylan with whatever this is. So when we see them next, they're all in business casual wear, trying to blend in at the airport and apparently not having much luck asking pilots and flight attendants about finding their business associate until clip 11.
Hi, excuse me. Excuse me. My name's Dick Millsap. So I work over at Coastal Auto Leasing on Concourse B. We had a mix up with one of our passengers, Eddie Waitkus. I was wondering if... Do you know Mr. Waitkus is on the flight?
The flight was completely full. I barely remember my name.
If that name sounds, if my voice sounds familiar, that's because it's a baby Eva Longoria. It's so funny when someone like this, who like later went on to be more famous than anyone in the main cast, like how much star power she has, like even in just that one line, it's so much personality. Like she's so much better even than the flight attendant that she ends up directing Dylan to, who actually gives him all the information. Like she really, you can tell she's got it. She's got star power.
Yeah. And the camera, like you notice when you're rewatching it, that it's Eva Longoria because you know who she is, but she still looks like it could be not her and you're not sure, but like the camera loves her sufficiently that you're like, either that's Eva Longoria or this character comes back later in the episode, which she doesn't. So it's just sadly, like, it's funny that her charisma is already that powerful that like the camera already knows that she's a star, even if the show doesn't. It's funny.
Yeah, it's also interesting that like this is far enough in the past that like inclusive makeup lines with like more shades of color were not a thing because they've powdered her up.
Oh yeah.
She's still obviously stunning and beautiful, but her skin looks like jaundiced. It's
not good. I will also note, Dick Millsaps is not a baseball player, in case anyone was wondering. I was going to say was writing a book, but leave it to the professionals. And Dylan is wearing yet another absolutely disgustingly inappropriate suit. Like, how does he have this many suits and they're all incorrect for whatever he's doing? It is maroon. Why?
I mean, maybe he's trying to look like it's a shitty uniform. Why am I retconning this?
I don't know.
Whatever. Eva directs him to another flight attendant who has a lot less star power and who worked first class and seems to remember the name, though she puts Dylan off due to confidentiality requirements for like 2 seconds before admitting she has heard Eddie say he lives in Tolleson outside of Phoenix. So these three idiots have flown to, I assume, Phoenix and driven to Tolleson, where Kelly has gone to Tolleson Cable, which has a gorgeous but very outdated sign you can see in the visual aids.
Yeah, it's right up there with that modeling agency.
Yep.
It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. So she's gone in to pretend that she's related to Eddie and get his home address, all of which Dylan irritatedly exposits to us and Matt. Sounds like even if she does get Eddie's address, Dylan's no longer sure he even wants to see Jack, since Jack never tried to contact Dylan the whole time he was fake dead. But Kelly comes out with a Waitkus account statement complete with address, so off they go. And after dark, Dylan and Kelly are staking out the Waitkus house, Matt having begged off with some fake work he needed to do at the motel. Dylan is a little salty about how nice the house is, and Kelly seems ready to give up when a Jeep pulls into the driveway and Jack gets out. and Kelly urges Dylan to go to him, but Dylan is frozen. And then the front door opens and a woman comes out with a kid in a onesie who runs into Jack's arms. And Jack is carrying the kid inside and kissing his wife while a freaked out Dylan watches and then says, there's no place for him there. I get it. But also he's kind of acting like an older child who's been replaced by the baby. Like, you know what I mean? But like as if he were a child in the sense of like, I want whatever the baby has. Bah, bah, bah. Like, why did you do all this? Did it never occur to you that he might have started another family? Seriously?
Yeah. And also, what is he supposed to do? Like, they sort of brush up against this numerous times in this storyline, but it's like, if he is still sticking to his chosen witness protection identity,
mm-hmm.
he's doing it at least in part so that you don't get killed.
Right.
And I don't know. Also, have some sympathy for the fact that I'm betting the wife and certainly the little bowl cut don't know anything about the, you know, giant sweatpants era. So,
right.
Yeah. I will say Luke Perry has a couple of, like, there's some unfortunate directing, like the pacing is way off. Tori is not good at this in this episode, yeah. But his face here, and there's one a little later that I'll make note of, but he just looks kind of stricken and mm-hmm. very young. And Luke Perry yeah. does a pretty good job with what is a poorly thought out garbage time waster endgame. So, yeah. Yep. Good job, Luke Perry, wherever you are.
So the next day, Matt's going back to LA for a meeting with a potential client, which I only mention in case it turns into anything, which I doubt. Kelly is ready to stay, but Dylan tells her to go.
Jesus.
So the next night, Dylan once again is spying on Jack's happy new life, only this time he actually gets out of the car to watch from a shorter distance away before turning around again and leaving. And the day after that, Kelly finds Matt at the Peach Pit and shows him her new business cards for KTPR, Kelly Taylor Public Relations. He's proud of her. I'm indifferent.
Yeah. Who cares? What she should actually do is be a PI, because she's actually pretty helpful in the Dylan storyline.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
She's already snagged her first account, which is the store, which she landed after apologizing for being shitty to Donna in the ER about Noah, which I'm not sure how much he needed to apologize. He did bust into your apartment drunkenly, and I doubt he's going to pay for that window. But just then, Dylan walks in to pick up a takeout order, and obviously they want to know how things went, but he doesn't want to talk about it and leaves. And just as obviously, Kelly goes after him. He tells her how he couldn't make it up the driveway. He didn't want to upset Jack's happy life, and talking to him wouldn't change what Dylan lost when he thought Jack died. And they have this exchange in clip 12.
It might help you understand everything that's happened.
Yeah, and make everything else I've been through seem even more pointless. Kelly, why do you think I go on binges? My dad died. I push people away from me who try to get close. I never, ever finish anything I start. Why? Because my dad died? I don't know who I am without using that as a crutch. I don't know if I'm ready to find out.
That excuse doesn't work anymore because your dad is alive.
Not as far as I'm concerned.
Ooh!
Oh, Jesus. I had to keep the excessive motorcycle noise in there. I mean, don't go find your old friend Jake and get him to fix it because he's not good at fixing his own, but do something.
Go park it by a pool and try to fix it. First of all, you have been in AA, according to the show, since before the show started.
Yep.
Second of all, we're about to see you drinking a very large... very large highball of brown liquor. Like, it's mm-hmm. not iced tea. So, show, this is not how recovery works. It's not how time works. It's not how show Bibles work.
Nope.
And I should mention that the scene where he, like, was in the driveway looking and then didn't go in, mm-hmm. it really was, like, 41 seconds of the camera barely moving closer to him and then cutting back and forth. Like, it's just really long. Like, I don't know, put the scene in with the conversation about Donna and Camille if you're running that short. We get it. He's not going in.
Right. Yes. Also, just to back up about like what made him binge, the first time we see him binge on the show, it's because his mother is not only not dead, but like is in his business too much. So like what amount of parent do you want?
Yeah.
Whatever. Mm-hmm. As Sarah said, when we see him next, he's drinking a large glass of brown liquor and staring into the fire burning in the fireplace he improbably has in his hotel suite.
In Los Angeles. Sure.
I mean, people do have fireplaces in Los Angeles. It gets chilly, but okay. Not in a hotel. You're not in a ski lodge.
Yeah, what? Well, whatever. Who cares?
Whatever. Drink in one hand, a baseball in the other. There's a knock. He yells at whoever it is to leave it outside, but they just knock again because it's not a delivery. It's Jack McKay.
It's DiGiorno.
It's DiGiorno. And he's like, hello, son. And that's where we leave it
and
for this time.
Once again, they cut back to, like, we fade out on Luke Perry's face, and he really looks like 9 years old.
Yep.
It's nicely done. What's his nuts? Josh Taylor, mm-hmm. not so mm-hmm. much. Like, his line reading of hello, son is really like smirky and combative.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, your actual new family, like the kids need braces, but if you're going to come back and do this, like, if just do it.
Yeah.
They could have put him in WITSEC and he'd had plastic surgery and they could have recast it. So don't be a bitch about it. Please.
Speaking of being a bitch about it, let's close things up with our MVP. Ooh.
Mm.
Everyone's kind of annoying, but considering how annoying everyone is around her, Janet stays a lot cooler than I would.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, right. I guess.
I mean, who else is it going to be? Matt for knowing when to stay out of the way between Kelly and Dylan for once? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I would say Camille.
But yeah.
No, not really.
It's true. She is really good at enforcing boundaries and being like healthy and talking about what she needs in a relationship. But then you remember it's all in aid of being in a relationship with David.
Yeah, that's the problem. So, yeah, I'm comfortable with Janet. Also, right, the suggestion that she put the diaper pail under Randy's pillow is, yeah, that
yes,
works.
Yes, exactly. Least valuable player.
Noah.
Vincent Young for his pain acting that looks the same as what we imagine his constipation acting would be.
I can't give the actor the LVP for that because it is so funny. It is so funny to
fair
me.
Fair enough.
It is just like hoint a retrospective. It's so good. I mean, it's terrible, but it gives me joy.
All right. So
say David/Brian Austin Green.
Yeah. Get out of here.
Yeah.
Okay, dude.
Gladly. Can we, please? Can you guys get engaged again, please? Thanks.
Time for Kim Challenge.
Bad, bad, and dangerous to me.
5 ways in this episode Dylan proves he is mad, bad, and dangerous to know. I mean, he's lying to airline employees, which is probably a TSA violation of some kind, which is potentially dangerous.
It would be now. It's bad to be drinking what is conservatively 7 fingers of bourbon when you're supposed to be in recovery for a whole bunch of shit.
Don't stalk people, even if they're your dad. It's creepy. Like, his wife could look out the window and see you standing in the driveway and get scared. And you know what? Legitimately have reason to be scared, possibly. So that's bad.
Well, and also she could shoot you. It's Arizona. You don't know. You don't know what Arpeo is getting up to. But if you are going to, and also if you're going to stalk your formerly dead dad, don't drag your ex-girlfriend and her fiance into it when that guy just got off probation for some dumb shit. That was like 7. Do you have another one?
No. Wait, what did Matt just get off probation for?
For who knows?
Oh, for his legal stuff. Yeah. Yeah. I suppose it's not a criminal matter that would prevent him from traveling, but still, he should be focusing on
getting
clients.
Should have been, who's Matt? Because why is he still here? Jesus.
Whatever. That makes a bunch, so yeah, let's wrap it up.
That's fine. Next time on Again With This, Melrose Place edition, if it's not one thing, it's Jake's mother, or it's Lamaze's stuff with the Mancinis, or it's a very important lesson about not catching situational racismitis from a mugging. You'll learn a very important lesson about not looking at our visual aids without a pair of eclipse glasses. Scorch your corny eye with snapshots from this and every other episode of Again With This on our website, againwiththispodcast.com, or on our Twitter account, @AWT90210. And you can ransack our storage unit for extra content by visiting our Patreon page. That's patreon.com/againwiththis. I'm still missing vodka, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter @TomatoNation. My co-host is Mummy Dearest, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter @TaraAriano. And our producer is Bookworm Retcon, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoonie.